that if you have that self-centered, focused leader, the athletes may not trust that leader enough to actually communicate what they're feeling with that coach. This becomes a problem now where, you know, maybe they get injured or maybe something comes up mentally that they're struggling with and they're afraid to tell their coach about that because the coach is showing that self-centered leadership. And the coach may not even realize that they're giving off that that vibe, I guess. But the athlete doesn't feel comfortable approaching that coach. Well, now that communication doesn't happen.
Hello, Michael. Welcome to Evidence Strong Show. It's my pleasure to have you. If you could briefly introduce yourself.
Hi, Alex. Thanks for having me. So my name is Michael. I am a Marine Corps veteran. I used to be a paramedic. I played college football at John Carroll University in Cleveland, Ohio. I'm currently a strength and conditioning coach with the U.S. Air Force Special Warfare School in San Antonio. I'm also a weightlifter and a weightlifting coach, and I'm also a dad. So I think that's the resume there.
Awesome. So we met before. We talked about the influence of music on performance, athletic performance. So if anyone is interested, please find this interview. It will be also linked in the show notes. And today we'll be talking leadership styles in coaching. So I think let's start with a brief introduction, what a leadership style is and why should we care?
Sure. In order to define what the style is, we have to kind of define what leadership is in general. Just to caveat here really quick, all of my sources are from leadership book and then heroic leadership, which, as I mentioned, I played football at John Carroll University, which is a Jesuit school. It's a Jesuit college, and the Jesuits are a sect of Catholicism, but they also believe in developing leaders at all levels. So I'm painting that picture because there's a few definitions of leadership I've been able to find that I think are very important to establish before we start diving into styles and different things like that. So the first one of leadership comes from Northouse. The textbook on leadership is a process whereby an individual influences a group of individuals to achieve a common goal. So what that definition is saying is basically a person is going through a process. So it's not that one person's, you know, solely making the decisions, but there is a process involved, and we'll get into all that with the different styles and types of leadership, but it's influencing a group of individuals towards a common goal. And that common goal and influence, that's going to ring true through most of these styles and traits, because that's ultimately what being a leader is inspiring others. The second one comes from the Jesuit definition, again, coming from heroic leadership. It's establishing direction, aligning people, motivating and inspiring, and producing change. So with the Jesuits, they're a little bit more people first minded, more servant leadership, if we want to go that route, but they focus on the people underneath the leader. So the leader is just there to help rise everybody up, where the leader is not the focus. And then finally, the last quote that I really like about leadership is from John Wooden, where leadership is the ability to get individuals to work together for the common good and the best possible results, while at the same time letting them know they did it themselves. So again, it's the coach or the person in charge pushing everybody forward and making sure that they get the best they can. And in this case, in Coach John Wooden's case, it's letting them know they did it, not necessarily he did. So with those three kind of definitions of leadership kind of out of the way, a leadership style is basically the tools, the personality, the traits, the different things like that, that are used to accomplish these goals, are used to inspire people, are used to motivate, are used to uplift other people and push them towards their goals.
Awesome. So with that in mind, let's jump into the styles.
Awesome. So the different styles, there's types of leaders and then there's styles of leaders. So the types of leaders come down to a trait-based, a skill-based, or a behavior-based. Your trait-based leadership is the age-old common idea of you're either born a leader or you're not. You either have it or you don't. It's important to note that this omits followers. So this has nothing to do with followers. If you believe in a trait-based leadership type, you're not looking at the followers. The followers have no influence on that lead. It is solely on the leader and how they respond to different situations. This kind of goes against the three definitions that I just laid out, where leadership's a process that motivates others and it's about the followers. It's uplifting the followers to go on about themselves. The positive of trait leadership is, as I mentioned, it gives you kind of a subset of skills that, you know, when we look at somebody who's just a born leader, well, what qualities do they have? Are they charismatic? They're intelligent? They're outgoing? You know, all these things. Okay, can we take those and teach somebody how to do that and make them into more of a, what the next type of leadership, a skill-based leadership, where leadership is able to be taught or learned? What experiences do you have? What education? Your culmination of life experience and education coming together to make a decision in that moment, or a decision for those followers, or, you know, whatever it is, through skills you've developed through that time. So you do need to understand. So if we talk about weightlifting, you can't just be somebody who's never weightlifted before or knows anything about weightlifting, but be a good leader and come in and be a weightlifting coach. You may be able to inspire inspire and lead and motivate. But if you don't have the technical aspect of it, you've never been on a platform. You've never been in front of the judges, in front of a crowd. You've never done those three snatches, three clean and jerks on a big stage. You just can't inspire your athlete in that moment in the back room, when they're about to go out and do that. This is arguable at different levels of sport, but ultimately within weightlifting, you have to have been a weightlifter or have done weightlifting to be a weightlifter. And I'm not saying be at a major level, but you had to have been on a platform at some time in order to have the technical ability of how is a warm-up go? What happens if you have a lifter drop out and now you're called up early? What happens if you have a lifter miss weights and now you're extending your time before you go? Like, what happens in all these backroom situations? If you've never experienced them yourself, it's different than just reading about them in a book. So that's technical skills. There's human skills, which is basically your interpersonal skills. How well are you able to talk with people and how well are you able to connect with people? So a lot of empathy there and a lot of communication skills as well. And then there's conceptual skills. So this is more of the big vision. So what are we looking at for the long term? So if you are starting up a weightlifting club and you have one or two athletes, are you good with just one or two athletes and you want to take them, to the Olympics? Or do you want to have a bigger, more general club where people are just coming in for fun, trying, feeling out the snatch and clean and jerk, kind of, maybe they compete, maybe they don't. Like, what is your vision for the program? And those are extremely important. And those are going to ring true as we look at the styles. And the third type of leadership is your behavioral leadership. And this one is a relatively newer style of leadership. So there's no clear definition of it, but it basically emphasizes the behavior of the lead. So this focuses on what leaders need to do and how they act in different situations. And there's two kinds of behaviors that are looked at in this paradigm of behavioral leadership. There's your task behavioral leadership, where you have that leader who's strictly focused on achieving the goal. So if your goal is to get a 300 total at, open event, well, then that's all they are focused on, is getting you that 300 total. Nothing else matters. And then there's the other kind of behavioral leader, which is your relationship behavioral leader, where they help others feel comfortable with themselves, with other people and the situation. So this comes into, you want that 300 total, but you maybe get nervous with all the people around. You get nervous with, a lot going on in the back room. And then the back room, there's bars dropping, weights dropping, people are walking all over, going to the score table, going back and forth. Are you able to help this athlete kind of, focus in, feel comfortable about their ability to lift, feel comfortable about all these other weightlifters around them? Maybe they're looking at them, maybe they're not. Like, who cares? It doesn't matter at that time. And then are they comfortable with that situation? So those are your types of leaders. These are the different styles that they can employ to be a leader. So your first one's situational leadership. And this is the one that I feel is the most important for coaches. Later on, when we get into, why should coaches care about this? Situational leadership is basically, what leadership style is going to work best for that athlete. With weightlifting, you get people that are former athletes. You get people that have never been athletes. You get young kids, just starting off. You get older people who just want to stay healthy. You get a whole spectrum of people that you work with, and they all are going to have different responses to leadership. There's two patterns that arise with situational leadership. The first one is directive, which these are timelines, milestones, achievements, like different markers like that. So, hey, we have 3 months until this weightlifting meet. We need to have you at this total. You need to hit these numbers by then in order to hit this total, so on and so forth. Our milestones are, hey, or a good way to view milestones would be your PRs. A year ago you were, snatching 120. Now you're snatching 130. Like, hey, these are milestones we're hitting. So basically keeping those in mind. And then the other pattern is supportive. So again, this is enabling the individual. We're not necessarily focused on PRs or strict numbers, but how is your progress? Do you feel better? If you're struggling with 100 kilos, but you're consistently hitting it, are you consistently hitting it and it's starting to feel smoother and better now, where it's still 100 kilos, but it went from barely making it to now it's a little bit more smooth and consistent. This is more of a supportive approach to your situational leader. So the second one is transformational. Now, transformational leadership is, the best way I can explain it is when you are beginning a program, you're a new coach, you're stepping into somewhere. It's your first attempt at coaching in that space, right? So transformational leadership by definition is concerned with emotions, values, ethics, standards, and long-term goals. So what transformational leadership is doing is you're coming in and you are setting the vision. You're setting the long-term goals. You're saying, here's where we're at now. Here's where we want to be. Here's how we're going to get them. And that's, again, when we're, starting a brand new weightlifting program. You have a brand new weightlifter that's coming to you. You have an experienced weightlifter who may be starting off with you again. It's the same thing. It's saying, here's where we're at now. Here's where we want to be. Here's how we're going to get there. And this is a very codependent relationship. So situational, transformational. The next one is authentic leadership. Now, this one is, again, it's another one I feel is very important for coaches to master, because authentic leadership is basically whether the leader is genuine and real. This looks at whether you're being honest or good as a leader. And there's basically three approaches to authentic leadership. The first one is your intrapersonal approach, where you know what you need to know and you're confident in your ability. So going back to weightlift, you're a multi, you know, national champ level. You've got all these accolades. You've, you know, been to Olympic qualifiers, all these things, right? You have a lot of accolades underneath you. You know, and you are confident in your ability for weightlifting, that now you were able to take that information and transfer that to your athletes that you have. And this is using your life experience to lead, is painting that picture. So there's a lot of just countless examples of that across weightlifting, where, you know, very high level weightlifters end up coaching phenomenal programs, you know, after they retire out of competing in the sport themselves. So that's intrapersonal approach to authentic leadership. There's the interpersonal approach, where the leader is developed by both the leaders and the followers. So this is where, kind of going back to that transformational, I'm coming in as a leader and I'm saying, hey, I'm just going to kind of see what's going on around here. I'm not going to make any crazy changes. I just kind of want to see how things run. And then we'll start, you know, greasing the wheels as we need to. And then the followers are giving feedback saying, hey, maybe we can improve this. Maybe, you know, we want to see these changes, so on and so forth. And now as the leader, you could take that feedback and say, okay, like within my ability, here's what we can start doing. And the leader and the followers start to grow through that communication and trust that's been created, just by stepping back, taking a look inside and saying, hey, like, I'm new here. I need to know what's going on. I don't know what's going on yet. Can you guys help me out here? And then the third approach is developmental, where authentic leadership is something that can be taught and nurtured over a lifetime. So what this means is, you know, your life experiences, your education, whatever else you're doing throughout the people you're coaching, different stuff like that, all of this contributes to how you are going to be as a leader. I think that authentic self, being yourself, can actually have very long-lasting rippling effects down the line. So tangent aside, the fourth style of leadership is your servant leadership. Now, as I mentioned at the beginning, a lot of this is coming from the leadership book, and then a lot of this is coming from heroic leadership through the Jesuits. This is putting your followers first. You are empowering your followers, and you're helping them develop their full personal capabilities. So you are solely focused as a leader developing your followers, your athletes. Whoever you are in charge of, they are the focus, not you. And whether we want to say weightlifting is a team sport, individual sport, whatever, 9 times out of 10, you're probably going to work with more than one weight. That makes you a team. So how is your team dynamic working? Are you focused on one individual than the other? We are trying to analyze each person within our, underneath us, analyze each person's traits and uplift them as much as possible. So that's servant leadership. Our fifth style is adaptive leadership. And this is slightly different than situational leadership, where adaptive leadership is looking at situations. So basically, it's empowering your followers to adapt themselves to the different situations. So what that means is, you know, that going back to that athlete that got injured, you know, a few weeks before competition, I can change my leadership style and, you know, be a little more empathetic rather than focused on the goals, or I can teach that athlete how to adapt to that situation and see that, hey, I am focused on these goals. We have this meet coming up. Let me do, as an athlete, let me do everything I can now to be as prepared as I can. Rather than, oh crap, I got hurt, what am I going to do? So it's me as a leader empowering my athletes in order to face situations head on and adapt to those situations. I say themselves, but it's with coach guidance, obviously, but it's empowering them rather than keeping the power within the coach. The way I attribute this to weightlifting is mock meets in your gym or wherever you're at least putting that athlete through, hey, you get, this is your first attempt and we're judging. Here's your second. Putting them through those paces, you know, a few weeks out from the competition. So when they go to their competition, that's not the first time they're experiencing that, those nerves or the stress of that. And if they're a seasoned weightlifter, it's just refreshing to practice, you know, stepping up to the platform on a timer, on the clock, not like, oh, hey, I don't feel ready. It's like, well, too bad, you got a minute, let's go. Like, oh, you missed your lift, you got a 2 minute clock, like, let's go. Like, you have to train for that. I guess to tie all these traits and styles together, I like to tie that whole section together by basically asking, so what determines a good leader? And there's just a few takeaways that I like to look at when, you know, defining what a good leader is a distinction between, are you leading or are you managing? As I kind of outlined, leaders are setting the vision and they're empowering their followers to, you know, meet that vision through different employment of styles. There are people can be great managers. You can be great manager. You can, you know, if you're director of a weightlifting club, you can be great with your budget, equipment, scheduling meets, whatever you're doing. You could be fantastic at that, but you could be terrible at inspiring your athletes. You could be terrible at, you know, cueing certain technique flaws. You could be terrible at the personable side of coaching, but you can be a great manager. And there's nothing wrong with that. As long as you understand that if you were in a leadership position, you do need to actually ask yourself, are you being a leader or are you being a manager? The thing with figuring that out is it lies in your interest. The second.
Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, ugh, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams, whew,
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
Determination of a good leader is what is your priority? So you've established you're being a leader, but your priorities may not be, you may not know what your priority is. So as I mentioned, all the models emphasize for the need of the group and the leader to work off of each other. It's a mutual, leadership is a mutual relationship. So without followers, there is no leader. Without a leader, there really aren't any followers. So what happens here is if you're after power or you're, self-interested, it's like, hey, I want to develop my athlete. So I can say I went to the Olympics, or I can say my athlete got a gold medal. It has nothing to do with them. It has to do with me. Well, that's going to reflect in your athletes, and that's going to reflect in, the athletes are going to be stressed out all the time. There's going to be high expectations. They may be unrealistic expectations. Your athletes may be giving you feedback, or they may not even trust you enough to communicate that feedback with you, but they may be giving feedback that's like, hey, I don't really want to be part of this program. I'm not really interested in this, blah, blah, blah. And then that's going to be evident if you are power seeking, or if you're only interested in propelling yourself forward.
Could we answer the question why even coaches should care?
Oh, absolutely.
Because you can just come to the gym and do whatever. It's possible. As long as your programming is sensible, it will probably work at some level. Why coaches should care about developing themselves into good leaders or great leaders?
Oh, absolutely. So why coaches should care about their leadership style? The first one is obviously performance. If you are honing your communication, your personality, your traits, your skills, if you're honing your leadership ability, you're going to be more precise with cueing. You're going to be more precise with how your athlete responds to cueing. So maybe you have an athlete that, wants feedback every single rep, or you have an athlete that just wants feedback at the end of the workout altogether. They just want to keep going and keep going. If you give that first athlete and you don't give them feedback every rep, they might start getting frustrated and start analyzing it themselves, and then they start messing up. And we've all been down that trail. Whereas if you start giving that second athlete, cues every rep, they might start getting frustrated with you because they just want to feel it out or whatever they're thinking, but they don't appreciate that kind of feedback. So understanding what type of leader you are and how you give feedback, in that case, you're going to improve your performance overall. Another reason is your communication and trust. So I mentioned with the previous one, that if you have that self-centered, focused leader, the athletes may not trust that leader enough to actually communicate what they're feeling with that coach. This becomes a problem now where, maybe they get injured, or maybe something comes up mentally that they're struggling with, and they're afraid to tell their coach about that because the coach is showing that self-centered leadership. And the coach may not even realize that they're giving off that vibe, I guess. But the athlete doesn't feel comfortable approaching that coach, where now that communication doesn't happen. Athlete goes on, on the stage, hits their lift, and something, they get hurt for some reason, and the coach gets mad, and the athlete's like, yeah, I've been struggling with this for a few weeks, and now it turns into a problem. So I want to emphasize with communication and trust, your words matter. So the same thing with cueing, where we have very specific cues for whatever aspect or technical component of the lifts, the words you say that are not cueing also matter to that athlete. So if the athlete's like, hey coach, I want to, I feel like doing some squats today, like can I squat today? And you're like, yeah, I don't really care, go ahead. Well, the athlete now hears, may hear, well, I don't care about what you're doing or your performance, so just do whatever you want. And further down the rabbit hole is, that athlete may start thinking, coach doesn't care about me as an athlete. Your words do matter. Even the words that you're not thinking about as a coach matter. That also goes for unspoken communication as well. So weightlifting coaches tend to have a certain stance. I it's a little meme that we have, but the way you're portraying your nonverbal communication, right? So if I'm watching a lifter and I'm just here like this, and they hit a PR, and my face doesn't change or anything, how is that lifter going to respond to me? Is that like, that lifter's going to be like, well, was he satisfied with that? Does he want more? Like, is he not happy? Like, what's going on here? And now, again, we're going back to, well, maybe that coach doesn't care about me or doesn't care about my progress or my achievements, you know, wherever their heads want to go. But your unspoken communication matters as well. So just being aware of that as the leader, as the coach that's up there, and being or understanding your leadership style and practicing your leadership style is going to open up more communication and trust between you and your athlete in that regard.
Do I understand correctly? The style of leadership should ideally be adjusted to the situation or the athlete needs at the moment?
That is what's generally accepted, yes. So throughout the different texts that I reference, it's generally accepted that no leader should be set in one strict style. That used to be the old paradigm where, you know, a CEO would have an iron fist and run everything to the T. That just doesn't seem to be the case anymore. Based on more, you know, people being more inquisitive, people want to know why more, a more empathy focused training. There's a lot of person centered approach to leadership now. And as I've mentioned throughout this period, there's no one leadership style to fit everybody. The best leadership style to fit everybody is situational, which utilizes, you know, different leadership styles. So if that answered your question.
Yes. So now the next question that follows is how to develop that. Because as a coach is starting their coaching career, they are them. They have some strength. They will probably have some weaknesses. How a coach should figure out where they are lacking or where they are strong and how they should go about developing themselves into other areas.
So the best advice that I could give on that question is one, self-reflection. And that's a very common theme through both the Jesuit text and the leadership text. If you don't know what you don't, if you don't know what you don't know, then you're not able to improve on that. So self-reflection, how do I feel when I'm speaking in front of my athlete? Are there potentially insecurities that I am trying to cover up, right? So maybe I'm projecting myself as a big authoritative person because I'm insecure about my position, different stuff like that. The next step for that young coach would be ask for feedback from people, from your athletes, from people above you, from other coaches. Get as much feedback as you possibly can and actually be receptive to that feedback. So if you get told, hey, you know, sometimes you need to stop cueing and just let the athlete lift, then actually, you know, stop cueing and let the athlete lift. And then through that, you're able to start learning, hey, maybe I should cue here, or I can pull back and the athlete's going to be just. Then once you've done your self-reflection, and self-reflection is constant. So it's not like, hey, I did, you know, one self-reflection session, I'm good, I know myself, like I'm done. It's like, no, self-reflection is a constant thing. I'm not going to give a specific, you know, time interval, but I like to do it at least once a month. I'll sit down with a notepad and kind of write out some thoughts and different stuff like that to help myself either work through why am I acting a certain way? Why am I projecting a certain way? Whatever it is, and try to work through that. So then now I can say, hey, am I being an authentic leader, or am I just doing this because this is what I saw another coach doing? From those two things, so you did your self-reflection, you got your feedback, then you can start forming your leadership style. What I mean by that is there are certain leaders that I look up to, and I don't necessarily study, but I look at different things that they do that make them good leaders. I read books and different stuff like that, and I try to take as much as I can, and then it circles back into that cycle. So then I reflect, hey, is this going to make me a good leader? Okay, good. Then I put it into practice, and then I get a coach that says, hey, that's not working. Don't do that. It's like, okay, cool. Got it. Moving on back to, you know, another book or another learning resource or whatever. Hey, let me practice that. So it's keeping that cycle going. So self-reflection, getting feedback, and actually, you know, acting on that feedback, and then continual learning. There's a lot of good resources out there for leadership, communication, relationship building, because communication and relationship building are major components of leadership. And then I would look into goal setting and vision setting, because as we mentioned, those are major components in a leader, but I would save those for later on because those are kind of higher echelon leadership. Maybe you're now director of a program or director of a club at that level. So just starting off very basic, self-reflection, getting feedback, and then basic knowledge in leadership, communication, relationship building, and then basic goal setting is what I would recommend for that young coach.
What is the role of trust in being a good leader?
So leadership can go two ways. Leadership, you can be appointed a leader. So basically you're the director of the department, or you're the head coach, you know, you're a leader. Or you can, looking at the trade approach, you can be a born leader, where maybe you're just an athlete on the team, but all the other athletes athletes seem to look up to you and your what you're saying or what you're doing, and you're leading through that capacity. So the trust component comes in to where if you're appointed the leader, are you coming in and saying, you're going to do what I say, listen to me because I'm your boss or I'm your coach or whatever, and that's that. And if you don't, you know, there's another team. Or are you going to come in and say, hey, like the adaptive leadership, hey, we're in this together. You're going to meet challenges. I'm going to meet challenges. I'm going to equip you as much as I possibly can as your coach, as your leader. I'm going to equip you, the follower, the athlete, as much as I possibly can to overcome these challenges yourself. Through that, you're going to develop better as a person. And then as you develop as a person, you're going to be able to create more rational thought, be able to attack problems, you know, more sensibly. And then through that mutual growth of each other, the trust should, if it's, again, going back to what our intentions are, if I am being an athlete-centered leader where I'm putting my athletes first and I'm not so worried about my next promotion or my next accolade, then that athlete should start to trust in me that I'm putting them first and I'm solely interested in them. So it's not, you're not just a weightlifter to me. You are a whole person that just happens to lift weights. And I care about you as a person. So once that's done, the trust should be established. Now on the back end, me as a leader, I should be able to come in, say, hey guys, let's get this warm up done. Here's the workout on the board. Again, I wouldn't say this is good leadership, but this is where the trust will come in. And then I should be able to turn my back and they do everything exactly the way, you know, I expect them to. They behave the way I expect them to. They hit their numbers. They're not cheating reps. They're not anything like that because they trust that I am putting them first. I have their best intentions in mind. So whatever we're doing program wise is probably with their best intentions in mind. And I trust that as my athletes, you know, they have enough buy-in, they have enough trust in me that they're going to do the things that are necessary for me. I don't know if that kind of answered the question you were going for there.
I think that's a question that had to be asked because you emphasize communication and you mentioned a few times about athletes trusting or not trusting the coach to say certain things about the injury or the struggles they're having or other things. So, but you didn't explicitly say anything about how it matters. So I wanted to make it or give you that opportunity.
No, absolutely. And I think again, if that athlete trusts that you have their best interest in mind, now when, you know, they throw a jerk over their head, you know, it looks kind of sloppy and you're saying, hey, what happened with that rep? And they're like, I don't know, my wrist is bugging me. They're not going to, they're one more likely to tell you, hey, my wrist is bugging me. But they also trust that you as a coach, you're going to probably say, hey, well, you know, let's get that looked at. Let's try to figure something out. Like, let's not keep trying to lift with that nagging wrist because again, their best interests are over my best.
Sometimes also it is required that they have to lift even with the bent wrist. So
exactly. And then that's when, again, with the interest, and I think that's why it's so important to understand what your interest is as a leader. So again, if I'm only interested in my athlete going to the Olympics so I can say I had an Olympic lifter and I can get all my credentials, well then I'm gonna, that athlete maybe 3 weeks ago tells me their wrist is all janky and I'm like, I don't care, keep lifting. And then they go up to the stage, hit a jerk, and then something breaks or something, right? Where yes, if I have their intentions in mind, that may be, hey, 3 weeks ago we got it looked at, we kind of know what we're dealing with. Now I can say, hey, in this case, if this was a real situation that I faced, I would put that on the athlete and say, hey, you and I have been working towards this goal. I have adequately prepared them for the situation. Now I could say, hey, do you trust me enough to go out there and lift with your wrist feeling the way it is? Or do you not want to do this? Like, where are we at? You know, based on where the intentions are, if I've been a athlete-centered leader, the trust should be established where that decision is not, that's a real decision for that athlete. That's not a fear-invoked decision. That's not a, well, coach is going to be disappointed in me. It's like, hey, there will be other competitions. It's whatever. But you matter more than this competition. What do you want to do as an athlete? And I think that's why I kind of mentioned the trust part under the communication and under that example as well, because, or under the priorities, because that's really where, why you should know yourself as a leader.
Okay. And let's push a little bit the situation we described. So the athlete is injured, there's meet coming up or competition coming up. You as a coach, let's say, think personally that they should not compete, the competition is not worth it, but they as an athlete made a decision to compete. What happens then?
So for me, that would depend on the level of the meet. So if this is a local meet and we're doing it for practice, or, you know, we're doing this just as a stay fresh kind of thing, I'm probably going to tell the athlete, and I know the athlete will probably get upset with me depending on their personality, but I'm probably going to tell the athlete, hey, it's not a really good idea to do this competition right now. Let's get that wrist fixed. And then we can do another competition to get you ready for the bigger one. If this is a bigger competition that matters a little bit more, and I don't necessarily think it's a good idea, but that athlete makes that decision, this is where, and there's no right answer in my mind to this, but this is where where trust can easily get broken or trust can strongly be established. Easily broken is me saying as a coach, I know you made that decision and I've been with you a long time. We're not doing this meet and that's that. And I'm automatically breaking that trust saying that athlete really wanted to do this meet. We worked really hard for this meet and now there may be repercussions for this, for them lifting. And I'm saying, hey, we're done. We're not doing this. And then athletes now is like, well, whatever they may think that my decision was, but that's a really easy way to lose trust if it's not handled correctly. With if the opposite happened where I'm saying, hey, I know you're dealing with this injury, but I think you can go. And the athlete's like, I really don't think so. That's one of those things where it's a little stickier for me because I don't want to force them to go out and lift on a bad wrist, if that's for this example. But also that's where, have I done enough as a leader to inspire them to that bigger vision? Have I done enough to, have I taught them to adapt well enough to say, hey, this wrist hurts, but let's focus on that, keeping that wrist a little more stable rather than letting it fall back or whatever the case is. Let's change that technique ever so slightly. So maybe it hurts a little less and we can see what we can do out. And that's where, if that trust has been established, the athlete may just say, okay, you know, I trust your judgment. Let's get after this.
I have a question from an athlete perspective. So you mentioned your own example, looking for a coach, how important it is for the athlete to find the right coach with the right.
We all know that owning a small business means you wear many hats, but sometimes you really need an extra pair of hands. Upwork is how good companies find great and trusted freelance talent. With more than 2 decades of experience, with the simple and ambitious goal of pioneering a better way of working, companies at every stage turn to Upwork to get things done and find more flexibility in staffing key projects and initiatives. They access a global marketplace filled with top talent in IT, web dev, marketing, and more. Posting a job on Upwork is easy. With no cost to join, you can register, browse freelancer profiles, and get help drafting a job post or even book a consultation. From there, you connect with freelancers that get you and can easily hire them and take your business to the next level. Visit Upwork.com right now and post your job for free. That's Upwork.com to post your job for free and connect with top talent ready to help your business grow. That's UPWORK.com, Upwork.com.
By the leadership style.
I think it's everything. There's a lot of aspects that go into team dynamics. And if you are looking for a coach, your coach may be the most knowledgeable weightlifter, the most well-respected coach there is. But if you don't match with their leadership style and they aren't adapting to that, to you as an athlete, they want you to adapt. You may not perform as well as finding that coach who may not be as knowledgeable, but teaches you in a way or leads you in a way that you are receptive. So to me, the finding the right coach for you as an athlete is more important than the knowledge or the experience of that coach. And I say that very carefully because you still want to have a coach that's knowledgeable. You still want to have a coach that's experienced. But, you know, if I don't want to sacrilege here, but if I use Abhijayev as an example, his coaching style is very notorious. And it was a very high volume, high intensity, if you get broken, replace with the next one kind of style, which if you can survive in that environment, you will be an excellent lifter. Awesome. But if you can't survive in that environment, that doesn't mean you're not a good lifter. It just means maybe that style is not the best for you. So John North, for example, his style and the Cal Strength style with Dave Spitz bringing Abhijayev over back in the, I want to say early 2000s, and then Glenn Pendley being there as well, is a very Abhijayev directed program where it's very high volume, high intensity. There were frequently days where it's like, hey, program says 3 singles at 85%. And if the fire's hot, keep going. Like if you hit that 85% and you feel good, go until you can't. And it was you were frequently PRing. You were hitting big lifts almost every day. You felt like crap at first, but then your body adapted to it and you were hitting those lifts. However, that's not for everybody. There are people that just want to come in, learn the technique of the snatch and clean and jerk, and they want to feel athletic about it. They want to feel good, but they may not want to push and go heavy every single day. And that's okay too. So in that case, maybe John wouldn't have been the right coach for them. Maybe Abhijayev wouldn't have been the right coach for them. Maybe that local CrossFit coach who isn't the most knowledgeable in weightlifting, but they're kind of generally in everything, but they have that personality that, you know, they really want to teach you how to do this. Maybe they're the better coach for you, and that's totally okay. You can still be a good weightlifter from that coach as well. And I think it's just really unfortunate that anybody would leave a sport because of one coaching style or one coach or one team happened, and they weren't able to just adapt and go to a different team. They just quit the sport altogether because of that experience. So I really think it's important that you find the right leadership. leadership style for US Pets.
So I just want to pick up on something important. I think you said that adapting sometimes means leaving this team and this coach and going somewhere else.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. If there's two cases of adapting with that. One is as the coach and one is as the athlete. So if as an athlete, the leadership style is not fitting, or maybe you have a physical limitation and your coach doesn't know, they only know how to teach a snatch one certain way and they don't know how to adapt to that limitation, whatever the scenario is, it is a hard decision to make, but you should be adaptable to find a different coach, or at least have that discussion with your coach and say, hey, I'm thinking of finding a different coach or a team because of X, Y, and Z. And then maybe again, that coach doesn't even know they were doing that, or they weren't aware of that. Or they say, hey, I've been a coach for 20 years. This is who I produced. I've done it this way the whole time. If you don't like it, sorry. And I mean, there are those coaches out there. So I think it's important as the athlete, again, to find the coach that you are able to work with and that leads the way you are able to, the leadership style you're able to work with.
One more thing on that. So weightlifting is an individual sport, but it is also a team sport. And the training often happens in a group environment. There are more than one athlete on the platform at the same time training. So what do you think should happen or could happen where there is a team and there is one athlete that is kind of stepping over boundaries, be it in behavior or speech or training commitment or whatever, that is not quite at the level of the vision of the coach?
Yeah, so I think there's a few approaches to that. I think the best approach, or at least the first approach, would be pulling that athlete aside and kind of talking to them and saying, hey, like, what are you doing? Like, why are you acting this way or saying these things, or, you know, whatever, what's going on? And again, as a leader, putting the athlete first, you're trying to understand that athlete. Is that naturally what their personality is? Are they kind of intimidated by all these other lifters and they're trying to put on a front, you know, trying to get to the root of why they're behaving that way. And then, you know, either addressing it then and there, saying, hey, like, it needs to stop, or is it something, you know, me as a leader that I'm doing wrong, or is there a misunderstanding of how this team operates, you know, whatever the case may be. But ultimately getting to the root of that athlete and understanding that athlete, I think should eliminate a lot of that. If that's been done and the behavior continues, and that may just be the way that athlete is, the older school mindset, and I'm not necessarily saying this is incorrect, would be to say, this is the culture, this is the vision, get on board or get out. And I'm not saying that's incorrect, because if you are in organizations, so let's go to like college athletics, for example, if you are in a college football program, like Alabama, I've read quite a few of leadership styles of Nick Saban kind of books and stuff like that. That's very, very much how he runs his program. Is here's the culture, here's the expectations. If you don't meet it, get out. And they are very notorious for having a high culture, or a good culture with high performance, and, you know, high performance both on the football field and as individuals later on in life as well. So they're meeting all the criteria that we define leadership as at the beginning, where we're developing them as athletes, but we're also developing them as both people, and they're completely athlete centered. And I think that's kind of the sum of it, is if this athlete, athlete with this weightlifting club is causing a distraction, they're potentially creating unsafe environments for the other lifters, different stuff like that. Well, now it turns into, I guess, the moral dilemma of, do you sacrifice the one lifter for the rest of the team, or do you sacrifice the team for the one lift? In this case, I would say if this lifter continues, we've had this conversation, I've adapted my leadership style to them and they're still acting this way, and other people, and it's bringing the team down, it's changing the morale, it's creating a lot of conflict, that athlete has to go now. Now, if that athlete turns around and blends in with the team, or still maintains their individuality, but is working better with the team, okay, awesome. We can keep the athlete and then work with them on, you know, maybe whatever, I don't want to say insecurities, but whatever the root problems were that were causing them to act that way, we can continue working on those. But ultimately, if I'm athlete-centered, I have to be team athlete-centered too. So I have my vision for the team. I have my direction. If you are not working within that, and we've had that conversation, you are very well aware, we've had that conversation and you're still choosing to behave that way, then maybe that isn't the place for you as an athlete. If I've adapted my coaching style as well, I've tried to meet that personality. It's not just I stick to one style, you didn't figure it out, get out. It's okay, you like, you know, more laissez-faire, like, I'm just going to let you lift. Cool, I let you do that. And you still showed me you can't be responsible, you're acting away. So unfortunately, this is, you know, you're going to have to cut them. So I don't know if that answered your question, but that would be, I don't know if there's a one right answer, but that's kind of the approach I would take.
Okay. But another question that came up when I was listening to the styles. So as a leader or as a coach, should you decide which style you want to embody, or it should kind of come up naturally as you go?
So this is back to the trait, skill, or behavioral, I don't want to say debate, but it's kind of a debate among the leadership scholars, I guess, whether you're born as a leader, whether you can be taught how to be a leader, and then how you behave as a leader during different situations. I like to think that your natural leadership kind of comes out, I guess, as we're saying it. You can pick a style and say, I'm going to be authoritarian and everybody's going to do what I say and we're going to do it exactly the way I say it. And that may work for a little bit until you get to a point where you don't know what to do anymore because that's not really who you are, or your team sees through that because that's not you being authentic. So I think a young coach starting out, or if you're a coach stepping into a young program, and this is kind of how I've described this in the past. If I were to go to a high school right now that's never had a program before, and they said, hey, we need you to come in, build a strength and conditioning program or build a weightlifting team, whatever. Okay, well, I'm going to be transformational. I'm going to say, here is the vision. Here's the direction we're going to take. Here's how we're going to do that. And then I'm probably going to be pretty directive and authoritarian and saying, hey, you guys have no clue what that even means. So I'm going to feed it step by step to you. And if you don't fall in line with this, we're not going to meet that vision. Then after a few years go by and, you know, the culture has been established, expectations have been established, everything's been passed down to where now that new athlete comes in and this is just how we do things around, I can probably step back a little bit and not be as authoritarian because it's not a newly established program anymore. Now it's a fully established program. You know, all the expectations and everything are set in place. So now I don't need as much hands-on. I don't need to be directly involved. I can step back and look at general operations now and say, hey, you know, on Mondays we go hard, on Tuesdays we do technique, Wednesdays we do this, you know, whatever, big Fridays, whatever. This is just what we do. So now my leadership style is going to change again because I'm going from transformational authoritarian, if we want to go like more spectrum, to maybe a more laissez-faire, more, hey, you guys got this, go ahead and run it. Here's the workout. I'm going to work on technique and stuff like that. And then, hey, another program calls up. We like what you did there. Come start one up. Okay, cool. I'm back over there. Now it's back to transformational authoritative. So it's, I firmly believe everybody can be a leader and everybody has a natural leadership style. I also believe you can learn other leadership styles, but again, those are going to be learned styles. So it's like speaking second languages. You may be very fluent in other languages, but you're still more likely to notice that's not your native language or your first language. So it's the same with the leadership styles. However, again, to reemphasize this, is very important to at least dip your toes in all the styles because you need to be adaptive to where, you know, maybe you have that lifter that likes every little detail spelled out for them and you need to be authoritative with them and say, hey, you're going to take your snatch in 1 minute and 30 seconds exactly. And if you don't, then, you know, there's going to be repercussions or whatever reason. Or you have that lifter that's very much like, hey, I just like snatch a clean and jerk. Let's just lift and see what happens. You need to be able to adapt. Maybe they're both lifting at the same time on, you know, different platforms during your team, your weightlifting team session. Cool. How are you adapting your leadership right there on the fly to both that? So I think everybody has a natural style, but they need to be fluid in as many styles as possible.
Let's say I am a coach that is very ambitious and I want to coach. I was a great athlete. I want to coach other athletes to get to the Olympics. How should I want to be upfront? But obviously it sounds a little bit cocky. So how should I manage that?
Well, when I'm talking about being a self-centered or an athlete-centered coach, I'm not necessarily saying being a self-centered coach is wrong or bad or, you know, evil or anything like that. There is, so, you know, the reason I agree to meet with you and like talk with you, right? I want to be a strength coach or a weightlifting coach or just a general strength and conditioning coach that is able to contribute back to the field. That's able to, maybe that young weightlifter watches this podcast and I'm able to give them something that helps them develop as a coach. That's pretty self-centered, if I want to say it that way. Like, I want to contribute to the field. I want people to hear what I say, stuff like that. However, I'm not doing it in a way that's like, hey, look at me, look at what I've done. I haven't really said anything about my accomplishments or accolades, but it's still, you know, I'll get, you know, recognition, I'll get publicity, whatever. It's still self-centered, but I'm doing this in a way that may help another coach later on down the line, which in this case would be my athlete. So that's athlete-centered focus. So I don't think there's anything wrong where, I mean, if I was, me as a weightlifting coach, if I had an athlete come to me and say, I want to go to the Olympics, and I said, cool. I mean, I'd be cool if I produced an Olympic athlete. Yes, that is me having that self-centered thought or whatever. And I said, hey, I'm going to produce an Olympic athlete. I think there's a lot of power to that self-affirmation too, saying I am good enough to produce an Olympic athlete, right? So now I'm saying like, hey, I'm a good enough coach. I'm going to act like a good enough coach. I'm going to start, maybe the athlete surpasses my knowledge and ability. So I'm going to go find a coach that's better than me. And I'm going to learn from that coach, making me a better coach. So I don't want to say I don't want to make self-centered coaching sound evil or bad. But if you are, I think what I'm getting at with the self-centered coaching is if you've already got multiple national level athletes, you may have a few international level athletes. And now you are strictly focused on yourself and saying, I did that. I'm the best. Like, look at me as a coach. Now your athletes are going to start suffering because you're only interested in producing your next number up there. And I think that's where it becomes dangerous in that respect. So I don't think if you're a young coach and you're coming up saying, I want to produce an Olympic weightlifter, well, good. I mean, that tells me, like, if you're telling me that in an interview or something, that tells me, one, you have a vision. So now I'm already seeing your leadership potential because you have a vision. I may ask you now, okay, well, how are you going to go about doing that? And you may give me XYZ, and I may say, well, you're a young coach, so great, but it may not work out that way, or I may help guide you in that direction. But at least you can tell me you have a vision. Here's how you intend to get. Okay, cool. So now what I start fleshing out is, well, why do you want to produce an Olympic athlete? You know, you can give me whatever story in the book, but that's where I think your true intentions are going to come out is, are you producing an Olympic weightlifter athlete? One, so you could be a better coach and, you know, everything I just mentioned about becoming a better coach in that process, or are you doing it just to say like, hey, look, you know, if we use college athletics, for example, I worked with this football team. So now I got a ring because I coached them for a camp once and I get a ring now. It's like, are you doing it for the ring or are you doing it for the coaching? Like, you get to coach. So I think that's where the difference, where being a self-centered coach is just kind of neutral, but that's where the difference between good or bad comes in, is what your intent is behind that. So I think it's really good that as a coach, you have a vision of yourself and you have a direction you want to get there, which is typically going to be your coaching philosophy. And I mean, I could go down a whole rabbit hole about philosophy, but I do think you should be adapting your philosophy as new research comes out, as new coaches, you know, maybe dive into the old philosophies a little bit more and try to understand them. That should be ever evolving based on your athletes as well too. So I think having that self-centered goal of I want to produce an Olympic athlete will ultimately help your athletes in the long run, because you're also going to hold them to a higher standard. You're going to hold them accountable. You're going to have expectations of them that, hey, if you want to do that, well, we have certain meets we have to go to qualify. We have to do international meets to qualify. We need to get on USA.
Support American-made tariff-free clothing with American Giant. With American Giant, they aren't affected by tariffs because their clothing products never left the U.S. Get 20% off your first order when you use promo code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com.
Or at least here, we have to get on USA Weightlifting's radar now. We have to make sure, can we financially fund this? Like, are we able to pay for all these meets and everything that's required for that? Are you in a situation to go to the Olympics? Maybe you have a family. Maybe you're, you know, working a 9-to-5 job and you're like, I want to be an Olympic athlete. Cool. Do you understand what that's going to do for your job? Do you understand what that's going to do to your family? The actual commitment that. So I think as a coach, having that saying, hey, I want to produce that athlete. Cool. I think it's just keeping those intentions clear are what really matters for that young coach is, why do you want to produce an Olympic athlete?
Okay, thank you. I have another question. So let's say the coach has an athlete coming in and they seem to be developing really, really fast and really, really well. They are maybe the best athlete they have at the moment in the club or gym or program. And now how they should go about that, because obviously the more attention from the coach the athlete has, potentially it's better for them. But there's also a team on the other side that needs the coach to how to go about balancing needs.
Well, and I think that's a tricky one, because I think that's where having your vision and your direction aligned come in. But also if you have that athlete progressing, maybe it turns into, okay, well, we already have 10 athletes on this weightlifting club. We can't bring any more on because we need to still focus on the team, but I need to give extra focus to this athlete. And if I have any more athletes, now I don't have enough energy or focus to spread across. I think it's being real as a coach and truly understanding understanding your limitations and your abilities to say, hey, like if I have that really high level athlete, but I also have a beginner, you know, 10-year-old athlete who's never done this before, if they're lifting at the same time, I'm not going to be the best coach I can be to both of them. So maybe a situation like that turns into, hey, maybe we have a beginner weightlifting class and then an advanced weightlifting class or whatever have you. And then that's a lot of logistics on the back end there with the facility and all that. But maybe you have to divide the team up that way. And I mean, some hard decisions get made, some feelings may get hurt depending on how you navigate that. But again, if you have that vision and you have that direction, if you can communicate that clearly to the team, I think a lot of people will understand ultimately. I think in that case, depending on where you're at, like if somebody comes to me, I mean, I don't want to say I'm not known at all, but I'm also not extremely well known. So if somebody comes to me, it's not like they're coming to me because I have a reputation or I'm well known or something. It's like, hey, you weightlift, I like your weightlifting. And I mean, actual Instagram message, hey, you weightlift and you inspire me, can you coach me? Yeah, sure, why not? Like I can do that. So, but now when you start getting into your higher echelons, there's some gyms I've talked to and I've been at for competitions and stuff that are very prominent gyms. Talking to them, yes, they have like their general weightlifting class, or for people that are just kind of interested in it, they have like their weightlifting team, and then they have like their competition team, and it's very divided. They have, you know, certain coaches with certain groups, and it's a business within the business, and it's very structured. So I think in that case, that would be the best approach to say, hey, like this athlete needs one-on-one training. Maybe personal training is not what they want. They still like that team dynamic, but it may be time to start considering options like that. I know going back again, John North with the Cal Strength Wonder Years there, they were notorious for their, you know, lifting partners. And Glenn Penley believed that pairing up the lifters, so John was with Donnie Schenkel, that brought the best out of both of them. So now me as a coach, I may have 12 lifters that are paired up. So I got six groups now I need to keep an eye on. One, you only have one lifter going at a time, like per platform. So maybe I only have six people to watch instead of, you know, 12 or eight or whatever's going on. But two, I can watch one lifter down here. And I know that if John over here is screwing around, Donnie's going to hold him accountable because they're partners. They're accountable to each other and they're lifting at the same ability or better, or maybe one's better than the other slightly, and they're pushing each other to be better. So I could say, hey, I know that if he misses a snatch for some reason, somebody over there is going to see why. They're probably going to give a little feedback on why. And then I could come in on the back end and say, well, based on what I'm hearing, or everybody's got a cell phone now and taking video. So I can watch the video back and say, oh, hey, here, you just didn't finish extension through your hips. That's why you missed the bar forward, because you didn't finish triple extension there. So I think it's not necessarily a problem with that lifter, with that one lifter excelling. You could just, I think in that example, just partner up, start having lifting partners, hold each other accountable, elevate the whole team as a, you know, as athletes. And then maybe you have those onesies or twosies that aren't necessarily interested in all that. And that's fine. They can be on platforms down on the other side. And then you can kind of walk the floor and monitor as you need to. In my experience, the lifters that tend to hit that level of the higher echelons of lifting, I'm not going to say they need less coaching, but they seem to have their technique pretty refined. They seem to be dialed in mentally. They're dialed in physically, of course, but they typically tend to do the right things when they need to do them. So they need less coaching, carefully saying that. They need less coaching than maybe that youth athlete who's just starting out and has never done a snatch. So I should be able to depend on them to do what they need to do while I'm down there coaching that 10-year-old athlete. So I hope that answered the question.
You're thinking how the coaches should go about developing a vision. Would you have some starters?
So weightlifting coaches, developing your vision, I would say you need to figure out, so going back to your question earlier about, you know, you're a young coach and you want to produce an Olympic athlete. I think developing your vision should, when you're a young coach starting out, should be, why are you coaching in the first place? So why do you want to be an Olympic weightlifting coach to begin with? One, unless you're at the high level, like there's no recognition in it. Like you can be a college football strength coach and your name is in the papers, you're getting on Instagram, like you're getting all these, there's a lot of accolades for that. You're a weightlifting coach, unless you're one of the big names, people don't know who you are. So there's probably a reason you're getting into weightlifting coaching to begin with. Okay, once you figure that reason out, you need to figure out, like, this is that self-reflection, but you need to figure out who you are. Why do you want to coach? Who are you as a person? And then typically between those two, you're going to start figuring out where you want to go with your career. And I think it's completely okay for a lot of young coaches, find a coach. So a lot of people don't just fall into Olympic weight. They usually come from CrossFit, come from prior sports, or they've seen it or been exposed to it one way or another. A lot of people don't just, like football, people could fall into football and be like, oh, hey, this football coach recruited me in high school because I was a big guy. Whatever. But that doesn't typically happen in weightlifting. It's very rare. So what I would tell a young coach to develop their vision, go back to whatever reason you got into weightlifting in the first place. Find that coach, find those people, jump on Instagram or LinkedIn or whatever and start talking to them. Have that conversation, just get to know them, like start talking to them. I don't want to say study them, but understand coaching philosophies, start learning different styles of coaching, different philosophies of coaching. So what is the difference between, you know, block periodization versus a triphasic periodization versus, you know, Bulgarian style versus German block, like all these different programs, what are they? What do they matter? Okay, cool. But what coach employs this? Oh, that coach is doing this in this phase. Why? Okay, cool. Once you start figuring all that out, now you can start saying, okay, well, I want to be this coach and I want to understand, I want to have these accolades or whatever, whatever. And now you're starting to align. Okay, I have, ultimately, this is who I want to be in the, you know, 50 years or 30 years, whatever. This is who I want to be. And here I am right now. Now, this is the vision. This is all the direction I got to take. And I think that's in between all that direction is all the substance of talking to the coaches, figuring out different programming styles, all that kind of stuff to figure out, do you actually want to produce an Olympian? Do you understand what you are saying as a coach when you say, I want to produce an Olympian? Or do you just want to teach the snatch and the clean and jerk and hang out with a bunch of weightlifters for 2 hours? Like, not, neither one is wrong. I mean, my first weightlifting coach was, in all sense, he was a bro. He would sit there, 3XL hoodie, super oversized hoodie, hood up and flip-flops. But I mean, the dude was a genius in weightlifting and he could tell you every weightlifter total, you know, the whole history of the sport. And he was a genius, but he just liked to sit there for 2 hours and hang out with weightlifters and like just lift weights. Like that was it. That's all he wanted to do. He didn't care about producing a national lifter, international. He didn't care. He just wanted to coach weightlifting, which I think is completely okay. So I think just knowing yourself, knowing, you know, going back to the whole topic of this podcast here with the leadership is knowing yourself and knowing your style, knowing your abilities will all point you to that vision that you're going to have ultimately. Most young coaches, and I say most because there are some, won't just be thrown into their own program and say, here you go, have fun. A lot of them are going to be under coaches and are going to be interns, GAs, whatever have you, where they're going to work underneath somebody who is going to have a vision. And they're going to be able to say, well, this is that coach's vision. Do my values and everything like that align with that vision? Well, maybe I liked some of it, but I didn't like all of it. Well, what would I change? Okay, I would change these things. Well, now I'm keeping these, but I'm changing these. So now this turns into what my vision. So I think it's just important to expose yourself as much as you can. I mean, the old trip, there is no failures, only lessons learned. I think there are no bad coaches. Well, there are no bad coaches, just coaches that are teaching maybe unorthodoxly, and there's still stuff to learn in that style, right? There's a lot of criticism on John where they say, you can't go heavy all the time, every day, eventually you're going to break. Well, I mean, I was with him for 2.5 years and we went heavy every day and I didn't break. Like it was regimented. It sucked a lot of times, but I've lifted the most I've ever lifted. I felt the best I've ever felt, where there's a lot of, especially USA weightlifting, where coaches are like, we need to stay between that 70 and 80% because that's where technique gets built. And, you know, there's all these scientific rationale, which don't get me wrong, I'm all about. At the end of the day, weightlifting is just weightlifting. We need to lift weights. So, you know, there's something to be said about throwing a bar over your head and, you know, having some fun. So I think it's just important to, like, again, expose yourself to as much opportunity, as many people, as many resources as you can. And over time, when you're finally in that position where you have your own team, you're going to have a relatively good vision for what you want your team to be. I hate to sound that way as like, it'll just come to you, but it'll just come to you. So,
okay. So let's say the coach had a vision, started the team, the things are going horribly wrong obviously not working for any reason. How they should go about changing the vision, I guess, and how the things are running.
I don't necessarily think they would. So it would depend. We'd have to look at why things are going wrong. The vision might necessarily not be what's wrong. So if I say I want to be a national level coach, let's just say that I'm a level 2 coach. I need 2 national qualifier athletes to be a national level coach. So if my vision is to be a national level coach, all my athletes suck for some reason, my vision might not be wrong. I'm not saying being a national level coach is wrong, but I need to look at the approach I've taken to get there. And again, so if we're talking about leadership now, have I been so focused on being a national level coach and producing a national lifter that I've neglected the athletes themselves? And I've been so focused on, hey, you know, we need this total at this meet to get you qualified for nationals. Everything else, yeah, I don't really care. We need to focus on that. That's why my athletes suck versus the vision of, you know, being a national coach or whatever, or having a national team, like, hey, all my athletes are nationally ranked. That's not a bad vision to have, but that maybe going wrong because I'm not a good coach or something, you know, like I'm inefficient in teaching the snatch, or I'm inefficient in teaching the jerk or something, and all my athletes miss their jerks, or sure, I'm terrible in the back room and I don't warm them up appropriately. The vision itself isn't necessarily the problem with being a national level team. It's something within the direction there that I need to fix, that as a coach or my athletes need to fix as a culture, which ultimately the culture is on me as a coach. I don't think necessarily the vision is what would change. I think it's the direction you're taking to get to that vision. So I think once you've established your vision, that's kind of who you are as a coach and who your program is. I think if the vision, if you're not getting to that vision, then there's probably other things you need to work on other than changing that vision. I don't know if that answered the question.
Yeah, that's fine.
I think once you establish the vision, if it's done correctly, you should say, this is where we want to be. We want to be a nationally ranked team. So here are the standards, here are the expectations. And then, you know, a year or two goes by, the culture is established now in line with that vision. If, for the example I'm using, if I'm terrible in the back room and I get nervous as a coach and I start missing, you know, I miscount the lifters or I miscount attempts and I screw my lifters over and stuff, that's not necessarily a problem with the vision. That's not necessarily a problem with the culture and expectations and all that. That's a problem with me as a coach, and I need to learn how to count attempts in the back room. So I think it's very dangerous when you start shifting the vision around, because that's when you shift everything around. That's when the culture shifts. Maybe that needs to happen, but I think that's a very last resort thing that needs to happen. I think you need to look at you as a coach first, your athletes second. Maybe it's the organization you're renting out of a CrossFit gym and they only let you have 12 to 2 as your weightlifting time, and you only get two athletes because nobody else can make that time, and you want to have a nationally ranked team. It's like, well, the nationally ranked team ain't the problem. The CrossFit gym giving you 2 hours in the middle of the day that nobody can meet, that's your problem. So I think that the vision changing is the absolute last result. And then again, you have to reestablish what your vision is. And if you've already established a vision, you've probably been coaching for quite a few years. You've put some thought in. This is from your experiences. You've done a lot of self-reflection. And now it's like, hey, that vision ain't it. It's like, well, what does that mean for me as a coach, me as a person? Like, all this time has been wasted. Do I even know who I am? You could just go down the whole existential crisis there too. So I think changing the vision is the absolute last resort. You want to change a lot of other variables before you start attack vision. I mean, as long as the vision is aligned correctly, the vision needs to be a sound vision.
Let's say the coach got there. So they have a national level team. The things are going great. What now?
That's the big question, isn't it? I think that's where the self-reflection and all that kind of comes back in, having that conversation with the lifters, saying, hey, you know, everybody's nationally ranked. We have a nationally ranked team. Where do we go from here? And see, you know, what the goals of the athletes are. Do we want to push for an international team? Do we want to push for some Olympic trials? What do we want to do here? And I think that's where, by then, if you've accomplished that vision, everybody's been in direction, everybody's been aligned in direction to get to that vision. I would hope that the trust has been established there, that when you pull that team meeting together and say, hey, we did it, now what? That's where, as a leader, yes, you create that vision, but that's where you can start saying, hey, what do we want to do as a team? What do we want to look, what are our goals now as lifters? And then me as your leader could tell you how we're going to do it. So I've never been in that situation, so I can't, if I did, I'd be a little more, like to think I'd have a better answer, but that's what I would do in that situation, is say, hey, we hit the vision, now what? And then I would probably ask the athletes, like, hey, well, now what? What do we want to do next? Like, hey, we shot for the moon and we hit it, but now let's, you know, go further. So I don't know if that answered your question, but
it does.
The approach I would take is just put it in the athletes. Again, athlete centered. It's not about me, it's about the athlete.
Yeah, I think it's good.
I do want to leave with the one thing that I was told very early in my career. So my career started a little unorthodoxly. I when I played football at John Carroll, I played till my junior year, and then my strength coach pulled me aside and said, hey, like, you're exercise science major. If you're serious about strength and conditioning, like, you're probably not going to the NFL. And I'm like, yeah, I figured that. It's like, hey, if you're serious about strength and conditioning, kind of drop the football thing and start shadowing and interning under me your senior year. Well, we finished football in November, so it was the second half of junior year into my senior year. And I think that was extremely instrumental in me becoming a coach, because one, I was kind of thrown into the fire. He's like, hey, you're pretty smart. I was already in the Marines. I was already a paramedic. I was in college a little later in life. So I was a little bit older. So I was able to have a little more responsibility, but I also had to learn very quickly how to distinguish myself from being an athlete to a coach, because when football season rolled around again, I had just played with everybody. I was one of their teammates, and now I'm in a position of authority as a coach. I had to learn very quickly how to distinguish between that. And I think that was instrumental. But that same coach later on, once I was graduating and moving on, he told me one thing about leadership. And this is what has stuck with me my whole time, is leadership is not about the athletes you produce or the lifters you produce or anything like that. Leadership is about the quality of the person you were with. So the quality of the athletes you had when you are no longer an influence of that. So what type of people are they when you're not around? Basically, the summary of that is, a great leader leaves leaders leaves a trail of leaders behind them. So if you're being a good leader, you should be producing leaders yourself. And these leaders should be, I'm not going to say, you know, images of you or mirror images of you, but they should have a sense of what they're doing as a leader. They should, if we're talking exercise science, the interns I bring on, they're going to be very knowledgeable in exercise science concepts. They're also going to have spoken in front of somebody before. They're going to have spoken in front of a large group before, whether that's in front of a team, in front of a board of coaches or executives or whatever. They're going to do the things that they're going to have to do eventually in their career under my watch, so I can give them feedback like, hey, I know you speaking to a board of trustees is not something you were taught in exercise science, but when you need a new weight room design and you need like 12 new bars and you need money, who do you think you're going to be talking to? You're going to be talking to boosters and sponsors, the community, about why it's important that your program gets this and what this program is going to do, benefit the community, and, you know, so on and so forth. Exercise science is like 1/8 of what you do as a coach. Here's everything else that you're going to do with interpersonal skills, communication skills, relationship building, all the stuff that's left out of exercise science curriculums that makes what a coach is. And I think that's something highly slept on, is being a coach is not about, or being a leader or being a coach, whatever. It's not about, hey, look, the athletes I produced are part of 12 Super Bowls. Here's all my rings, like blah, blah. Yeah, cool. I don't really care about all that. You know, what about the D3 athlete that is now working in a law firm or something, and they're out there helping their community, and they're in charge of, you know, these volunteer groups because of the inspiration you had on them as their coach and the person you produce as their coach, and you're no longer, you know, they're no longer under your influence, but you had such an impact on them. They're out there contributing to society, contributing to their fields, maybe giving back to the sport that they love, giving back to the youth, whatever they're doing, but they're in a better position because of the influence you had on them. Again, that's a two-way street. You could have a very negative influence on somebody without even knowing. So that's always stuck with me, is basically just being aware of yourself as a coach, being aware of the words you're using, the nonverbal cues you're giving, leaving everything at the door is a common phrase, where if I'm coming into that weight room, I may have just had a really rough meeting with my director and he's like, hey, your job's on the line. Like, you know, one more mess up, you're out of here. And I could be emotionally rattled, but I have to go out and coach this team. Well, I'm leaving that at the door because it's about them. It's not about me. And I need to show them like, hey, I'm able to adapt. I'm able to do all this, but you know, I need to be your leader right now. And I can't let that other stuff bother. So I just kind of wanted to close with that. There's words of wisdom there from my coach, passed down to me, passed down to whoever gets to hear this now. So again, a great leader leaves a trail of leaders behind them. I think that's all I had.
Awesome. So last two questions, favorite lift and why?
So favorite lift is the snatch, because it is so technical that when you get it right, it is the most amazing thing in the world. Like, it's so snappy, you feel awesome, it's athletic, and you're like, yeah, let's go. And then when you get it wrong, you're just like, okay, like it's so dynamic. But it's definitely the snatch, because once you get it right, that feeling of just aggressively ripping that bar from the floor, making that full extension contact, snapping down and getting that lock, is just, okay, yep, I'm doing this right. It lets you know your progress. And plus, the snatch is fun. The clean and jerk is just work. You know, snatch what you can, clean what you must. I'm not there to work. I'm there to have fun. So let's just snatch. And if I just don't have time for clean and jerks, and whatever. Sorry. I'm kidding. I always do my clean and jerks. Accessories are another story.
We're getting somewhere here. Okay. Where people can find you if they want to contact you on the internet?
So LinkedIn, I'm pretty active on, just searching Michael Richards. I'll have all my little letters after my name as well. And then Instagram, Coach Mike, all lowercase. And then 300. Pretty much those are it. Those are the only ones I'm active on. I have a X or Twitter account, but I'm not really on it. Yeah, so just Instagram and LinkedIn are pretty much where I'm at.
Okay,
Instagram is all my lifting.
Awesome. Thank you so much for today.
Of course. Thanks for having me on. This was great.